Tawananishi, and this is Broken Open. Today we have Sadal for part two of our stories of survival, parenting a child with a chronic illness. Broken Open is all about delving deep to discern why some people are able to break open, rather break down when tough times happen. And if you listen to part one of Sadal's story, you'll know that while her family was hit with the unimaginable, they've been able to pull through with faith and love and support and just really kind of finding ways to get back to themselves. So Sadal, if you could just tell everybody about Phoenix, your son, and we left off knowing that he was going to need a heart transplant, but he hadn't yet had it. And if you could just fill in some of those gaps for us, please.
Sure. And thank you again for having me. So Phoenix was born with a congenital heart defect called a class 3 heart block. He had his first open heart surgery within 30 minutes of birth. He then had another heart surgery within 2 weeks after that, where a permanent pacemaker was placed. He went into heart failure at about 4.5 months old. And we were given two options at that point, which were palliative care or heart transplant. Either one was going to be a hard decision for my husband and myself, just because we didn't want to give up on Phoenix's life, which was essentially what palliative care is. It's end of life care, just to keep them comfortable as a person ends their life. And then with a heart transplant, our doctor explained it pretty well to us as we're treating one disease for another. So he has a congenital heart defect, which is a disease that we have to treat with medication and a device, and then a heart transplant, which is not a perfect science. Still medications involved, still lots and lots of work that has to happen with that heart transplant.
And so you chose the path of heart transplant.
Yes.
And how old was he when that happened, and what were the months leading up to it, like while you waited for the heart? What was that like?
So he got his transplant at 7 months old, infant, like baby. 7 months old. We waited for 74 official days for his transplant. You have to go through an evaluation process first, which includes interviews, making sure that you as a family are mentally ready for the challenges that are going to come with a heart transplant. And then you have to go through insurance because it is an extremely expensive surgery.
Yeah.
Just the weight alone is expensive. The surgery itself is extremely expensive. So we have to go through all of that process first, and then they're officially put on a transplant list because Phoenix was so incredibly sick when he first got to the hospital. He was put at the top of the list. Another time in his life where he was not expected to survive. But when we got that phone call after waiting 74 days, and I kept track of it on a whiteboard in his room, I fell to my knees. Just because he didn't have to be in the condition that he was in. So he wasn't going to have to live much longer with a breathing tube, with I don't even remember how many medications just stacked on top of each other, medication after medication, all going through a central line. So it wasn't even like he was taking it through his mouth. It was all going through and into his veins directly. He wasn't going to be in a sedative state anymore. But at the same time, another parent has lost their child. So it's just such an emotional roller coaster, just the idea of the transplant itself. And then when the day actually happens, all of those emotions hit you as well.
I I shared with our audience last week that Sadal and I have a bond because I also am the parent of a child who had a heart transplant. And my daughter had 4 open heart surgeries prior to the heart transplant. So the transplant was actually her 5th. And so I understand that feeling all too well. And you are euphoric. And you feel for the other family so much because you have come very close to losing your child. And so you just are, you know, as much as one can, you know, that hasn't gone through it, what they're going through and that they made this ultimate sacrifice. And, you know, Sadal, for me, Avery was a little bit older when she got her transplant. She was 2, almost 3. After the initial euphoria, I started sobbing because she had a chance at life, maybe a normal life, and she didn't have to fight so hard anymore. Right? Like, and since Phoenix had been born, he'd been doing nothing but proving his name correct, but also it had been nothing but fighting for him and for you guys. And so he gets the transplant, and was everything smooth? Just kind of walk us through what happened.
So
you're feeling these things, but there's a chance for him and he has the transplant, and then what?
So everything was good. It was actually really smooth. We kind of got kicked out the hospital. Like, they're like, you're like, y'all have been here long enough. Yeah. He was ready to go. Like, the heart changed his life. And not just because he was alive, but he had more color. He was able to show his personality because he wasn't on medications that were sedating his entire being. He was able to breathe on his own. His heart didn't have to work so hard anymore. He actually had a heart, his original heart was the size of a kid that was more than twice his size. So it was working so hard that it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger in order to accommodate all of what his body needed. So he didn't have to do it anymore. Like, he was, it's like his body was saying thank you, because he didn't have to fight like he had to for his entire life beforehand.
Were you nervous when you were discharged from the hospital?
Girl, yes. I told you they had to kick us out, because even though I was there every single day of his stay, every single day, and I would talk to the doctors all the time, I was in there like, okay, this alarm's going off. You know, I knew all of what to do in the hospital. You still have a team around you. And that's kind of all I've ever known with him, is a team that was around me almost every single day. And they're like, okay, bye, go do it all by yourself. So I mean, the hospital where he had a transplant prepared us very well. We had to stay overnight to make sure, a full 24 hours, both my husband and I, anybody that was going to be a primary caretaker had to stay 24 hours so they could observe you, making sure that you were doing everything that you need to do to make sure this kid was going to be okay once they left their care. But he came home on 16 different medications. He also had a feeding tube through his nose that went into his stomach. And because he had been laying on his back for essentially 3 months, more than that, he had to have a helmet, which had to stay on his head for 23 hours a day. Oh my goodness. And again, he's still just 7 months old.
Yeah.
8 months, you know, getting close to 8 months old. He still has to be like a regular infant, like a regular little 8 month old. So it was really, really hard.
How did you get through that time? You know, was your husband able to take time off of work? Were you able to have any time with yourself? Did you think about anything other than his care? Just what was that process like for you?
Everything was about him. So my husband couldn't take off of work because he was the primary caretaker of our entire family. I wasn't working any longer just because I dedicated all of my time to Phoenix while he was in the hospital, and even still now, honestly. And so I was by myself essentially in a ho another hotel room. This one was actually a little bit nicer. It had beds in it. But I Phoenix's medications were every 3 hours. He had complications as like throwing up and not wanting to sleep and always wanting to be held, because while he's in the hospital, he doesn't get to get held the same way. When you have a breathing tube, you have to have three people take a child and put them into your arms. So they're not used to that contact anymore. And when they get it, it's like, whoa, like I want this all the time. So it was a lot of sleepless nights. My mother-in-law is a prayer warrior, and she's also a former nurse. So I spent a lot of time talking to her, just like, Mom, he's not sleeping. I don't know what to do. Like, just get me through it. And she was always like, it's gonna be okay. She definitely is the faith pillar in the family, and always talks some sense into you, but in a really good in a good way.
We all need somebody to check us and fill us up like that, I think, when
Yes.
we're going.
And she would, and she wouldn't care what time of the day or night I called. But it was a lot of time with him, just the two of us. And then whenever anybody else come to visit, they would. But it's a challenge. It's not normal.
No.
It's not normal.
Did you ever crash? Was there a time throughout all of this, where you just needed a moment or a day or where you felt like overwhelmed to the point where like this function mode's not functioning anymore? Was there ever a point where just for a moment it all got to be too much? Because I think sometimes because we do things, it looks easier than it is, because we may not speak about it to a lot of people. They take it for granted that perhaps we are okay, right, when we're not. But I think everything culminates and everything that we deal with has to come out at some point. And I think sometimes it takes people years. Sometimes they suppress it so much that it never comes out and it's something that they have to deal with later. And then sometimes, when it finally comes to a head, you just need that moment. And so, did you ever have any moments like that? Even up until now, it doesn't have to be, immediately post-transplant. Has there ever been moments where you felt anything akin to that?
There's been tons of moments. So transplant, like the doctor said, is one disease for another. So we have had a lot of feeding issues, physical issues, emotional issues. Phoenix has gone through so many different therapies, and you expect things to happen within a certain time frame. And that never happened. Everything's on Phoenix's time, honestly. So rolling over, he wouldn't roll over. I cried about that. He wouldn't crawl. Cried about that. He wouldn't walk. I cried. Like, there's just been so many breakdowns. He wouldn't eat. I cried because a lot of times it just takes you back to that place where you've come from, and you think that that's going to happen again. It's post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, it just takes you back to that bad place in your life, or one of the worst places in your life. And I still deal with it to this day. I had an anxiety event yesterday just about feeding issues, because even though he's 3 years old, he still has a lot of difficulty with eating. I do see a counselor. I was seeing her once a week, and now we're down to twice a month, because I've been able to work through a lot of my feelings, including a lot of mom guilt.
And where did that mom guilt stem from for you?
So, because it was my autoimmune disorder that caused his heart defect, that's where the initial stem came from. I always felt like it was my fault. Like, if I didn't have this autoimmune disorder, I wouldn't have had a son that had a heart defect that needed a heart transplant. any time that he didn't meet a milestone of when I thought he should, I felt like it was my fault because I wasn't working hard enough to get him there. So it just, a lot of times it just feels like I wasn't ever good enough. Everything was, could have been better if I would have done something differently.
So when you feel that, and just, I feel it on a visceral level as you're recounting it to me now, when you feel that, and that's your mindset, and that's kind of like your belief system, how's that affecting you on a day-to-day? Like, was it just anxiety, or how did it manifest itself when you've got these thoughts, you know, kind of playing in your head?
It's anxiety. It's breakdowns, like full out tearing, can't get out of bed breakdown sometimes. And there's two things that I have worked through to make it better. One, my husband is, he's very black and white. So he black and whites Sadal. So we do a lot, there's a lot of that. And then I have gotten a little bit white Englishman's and how far he's come with so many things that were never expected of him. Talking to somebody. So talking to somebody else about it helps. Mm-hmm. The same space as I do.
Mm-hmm. Sadal, I think we lost you for a little bit. Hello? Hello?
I can hear you.
All right, we've got you back.
Great.
Okay. So you were just saying that you're speaking to someone, and that speaking to someone helped. And I think in our Black community especially, there can be a stigma around mental health and just acknowledging that we have an issue and, you know, taking the steps to get help. And so was there any of that for you, or what was the impetus that made you recognize, okay, you know, I've got this wonderful husband who's walking me through these steps, and, you know, but I need to do something else. I need something bigger than what we have right here. What was that?
This time around, I've sought mental health before through different points of my life. This most recent, it wasn't really my choice. My physician's assistant and one of Phoenix's therapists, you're stressed. You need to talk to somebody. And his therapist actually found someone for me who have people that they care for that are medically complicated.
Amazing. You know, I can speak to the testament of having people hold space with you that have gone through the same things that you have. And so have you found any commiseration with other parents of medically complex children? Did you forge any connections within the hospital at all? Has that been just a touch point for you to help get you through some of the tough times?
It really has been. Because they're, especially in this community, heart disease transplant, it's very, very small. There's a even just the transplant, the heart transplant itself. And until he was undergoing his transplant, I hadn't even met a single other. Hear me?
I can hear you now. We lost you for a minute. I heard that until he was going through his transplant.
Yeah. So until he was transplanted, I'd never met any other mom that was like me, that had a really sick kid related to their heart. So when I found that, it was just amazing. And I still talk to these women on a regular basis, because they know things and can feel things that nobody else knows or can feel.
Absolutely. I know that to be true for myself as well. It wasn't until I brought Avery to school for her first, you know, school day, and I was with her, right? It was a transition program, and she wasn't going to let me go anywhere because we'd been attached at the hip her entire life, much like you and Phoenix had, for the same reasons, right? But you extend that to 2.5, you know, 3 years old, and then it's like, oh, we're going to go to school, right? So we went to go, you know, take her to school. And I just said flippantly, you know, to, oh, well, you know, because she's had a sternotomy and because her, you know, her chest has been cracked open like 4 times or whatever. And so she's not, and I'm just saying this to just a traditional mom who just, and she just, and she looked at me like, and I forgot that there was lingo and that that's not normal, you know, for other people to kind of like go through, and that maybe I scared this poor mom away. because I was just referring to, you know, something, whereas for a traditional parent, taking their kid to get a shot, right?
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. And at some point with us, I don't want to say, I mean, anything is a big deal for your child, that is a big deal for you, right? And we understand that. But when you've lived through, you know, there's this, if anyone's seen Hamilton, there's this whole song about, you know, here's this couple and they've just lost their child and they're going through the unimaginable. And I think some of the things that we've borne witness to are things that are unimaginable for the average individual, right? Some of the traumatic stuff, like in the midst of it, and then some of the stuff like after we come home. So I just really kudos to you for taking all of this, for getting help, right? For finding a community, for putting your foot forward every day, because I know that you've been in the hospital and you've seen parents who are not present.
Yes.
For children in these circumstances, and we don't know their stories and we don't know their reasons why. But we do know that not everybody's equipped for everything that's thrown at them, right?
Correct.
And so I want to ask you, what do you think is within you, was within you, what's been fostered within you that has been able to allow you to navigate this and get help when you need, and be the strong mom that you need to be for your son, but also be the you that you need to be for you, because you matter too.
Phoenix has really been the root of it. If he could fight, if he could make it through all of this, there was no reason for me not to be by his side and fight with him, because he was a baby. He still isn't able to communicate for himself. I have to be that advocate for him. So no matter what it took, I knew that I had to be his advocate, because he couldn't do it for himself. It's not like when you go to, as an adult, go to the doctor and you say, hey, this is going on, this is going on, this isn't right, you need to help me. He can't say any of that. I have to be his mouth. I have to be able to feel what he feels so that I can tell the doctors what's going on with him. So that was cute. That was the biggest driving factor, and still is.
What does Sadal have for Sadal?
I have physical health, and keeps me going. It's something that I love to do. And then I try to help other families that are like mine. So I volunteer. And then I try to be that support system for even my friends now who now have medically complicated children. I'm that support for them, and I try to do what I can for them. And it really does make me feel good when I know that other people can find hope through my story.
Where do you find the energy and the bandwidth to do that with everything that you have? Do you just, is it something that you feel called to do because of where you've been?
It is. And it's a rare story, but you'll be surprised when, I'm always surprised when I share my story, how many people find similarities or can find strength in that, knowing that things can get better. Even when they seem to be at their worst, things can get better. And that every time you feel that new connection with somebody, or you're able to see that in somebody, it makes it feel, puts more fuel in my tank.
So we know that a heart transplant is not a cure. And for me, it always feels like there's one shoe, you know, in the air, one foot on the ground, one foot in the air, kind of like waiting for the other shoe to drop, but still managing to find ways to enjoy life. We know that Phoenix has some delays and some difficulties in some area, but we also know that he's joyful and happy and a flirt and strong and like loving life. And I know that I can speak to both Phoenix and Avery. They don't think that there's anything wrong with them, and there isn't, right? There really isn't, because they've overcome, and we're in a good space for now. So what are your hopes? What are your hopes for Phoenix going forward first? And then what are your hopes for you independent of Phoenix and being Phoenix's mom also?
So hopes for Phoenix are go to college, get married. Life from all that he's been through that isn't normal for him to be able to experience as much normality as possible. And hopes for myself are to be able to make him as independent as possible so that I don't have to continue to just be his advocate. He can advocate for himself, which will take a lot of pressure off of me, a lot of stress off of me, so that I can go back to running, go back to traveling all the time, going back to work, because I've spent the past more than 3 years now just making sure that he was okay.
And that will be a great example for Phoenix, right? Not only the support that you've given him, but the fact that you were able to carve out some space for yourself and have a life. And it will enable him to have that good role model in you and in your husband going forward. If there are two or three things that you could tell anybody if they're hit with the news that you are hit with, or if they're hit with something that just takes them completely outside of themselves and redefines their life, like Phoenix's diagnosis and birth has done for you, what are those things that you would tell them for advice or to give them hope, or where would you tell them to look for help if they need it?
I would say, one, don't give up faith. Don't give up faith. Don't give up hope, because like I've been Phoenix's advocate, you are your child's advocate. There's nobody else who's going to know your child better than you are, as their parent, mother, father. You're going to know your child in and out, especially in a medically complicated situation. Mm-hmm. It's hard, and it was really hard for me, find people that are like you, that either are medically complicated or have the same disease disorder that your child does, just because it gives you hope and faith that they've been through it, so you can get through it too. You'll have a connection with them that you won't with a traditional parent would. And then find some time for yourself. Find some moments that you can take for yourself, even if it's just going for a walk. For me, like I said before, was just being able to go outside, even building relationships with Phoenix's medical staff really helped me be able to get through it, because they brought me a sense of normalcy then too.
Thank you. Thank you for Thank sharing you. Phoenix's story, and thank you for being a beacon of hope for families and for, with all that you have going on, finding ways to give back, in tangible ways to other people, and for being so authentic with us today about some of the struggles that you've encountered, but also just the way you and Phoenix and your husband have been able to rise from the ashes, which is how he's gotten his name. And in closing, you know, I want to say one of the things that I know to be true is that we can become complicit with our trauma, and we can become complicit with toxicity even, right? Things that are not good for us, or traumatic situations that happen to us, especially when it's a child who is ill and it's something that there's not a cure for. And so you're going to be living with that throughout your life. It can become your normal if you allow it to. And so I think it's important for us to find things that bring us back to ourselves, whether it be prayer or running or an individual or breathing or shutting the door and crying or, you know, speaking to someone. It's really important to remember who you are outside of that trauma and outside of that toxicity, because that's the thing that gives you the fuel to move forward so that you don't break down and you do break open. And so thank you for stories of survival today, parenting with a child with a chronic illness. Thank you for being present and holding space with Sadal for her story. And thank you for listening and watching Broken Open. Again, this is Broken Open. This is Sadal, and I'm Tawana Nishi, and we look forward to seeing you next time.